So I also would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak. Perhaps a better title for my talk, comparing to the talk that started us off today, which might be said sort of inverse problems solved by microlocal analysis. Instead, this one might be problems in microlocal analysis suggested by inverse problems. So the thing that I'm interested in is the restricted X-ray transform. So a particular X-ray transform, just say for lines in R3, but we'll not take all lines. We'll look at some, say, three-dimensional submanifold of lines in three space. All of lines four, three space is a four manifold, and we're asked to. Well, there are things you could ask. Are there reconstruction formulas? Are there, if one can't get a reconstruction formula, can one reconstruct singularities, that is, wavefront set, similar to what Martin was asking for this morning, but geometrically a much simpler problem. And then one has also been interested in problems of, say, not assuming that one has all the data, but one only has local data. So if, for example, one is given the geometry of some large object, one has some X-ray source moving on a curve, but one's only interested in something that happens in a neighborhood of a point, and what can one say about singularities there just from data that passes through there, right? So one would give up the possibility, of course, of full reconstruction if you have a large object and only a small amount of number of lines passing through it or just in a neighborhood of a point. But one, what can one get about the wavefront set there? So that's really my setting. Will come deal with two examples. That one that I've drawn here, which is, I'll think of the set of lines as being all lines passing through some curve in space. And I'll be interested in some set omega here, which will be the support of my unknown objects. And I'll suppose that, say, my curve lies in the exterior of the convex hull of omega. Second example, now, I'm also going to deal with as far as I know, it doesn't have a practical application, but just as an example of how some of the ideas, or maybe it's maybe even more a philosophy or viewpoint that I'll talk about, will be applied to a very special line complex, which was all lines of this form, where parameters x1, x2, x3 lie in R3. And this was just taken as a model example by Greenleaf, Seeger, Wenger, and maybe some others to study mapping properties of a certain class of degenerate Fourier integral operators. But I wanted to see whether these ideas could be applied in an example which was a so-called technically a non-admissible complex. Okay, so I'm going to let R sub C be the X-ray transform restricted to this submanifold. That is, we'll only look at the X-ray transform for lines lying in this submanifold of line C. And I'm going to be interested in studying the RC transpose composed with RC as a mapping from distributions with comport support in omega to distributions on omega. So this is your... is this your imaging operator? Which was it?
Your
normal operator. So what would we like to know? So we'd like to know, for example, how is the wavefront set of the RC transpose composed with RC applied to mu related to the wavefront set of mu? Of course, that is, can the singularities of mu be recovered? If one had full data, could one do full or partial inversion? Since I'm interested in local problems, I'm not going to attempt or say anything about real inversion. And then one could say, is there anything to be said about various mapping properties with respect to different kinds of scales of spaces for these operators. And this might be, say, a refinement of just the wavefront set analysis for various smoothness classes. So a little bit of history. So it's in a somewhat more general setting, but these the kind of operators of the form RC transpose for RC, the normal operator for C admissible, were first studied by Greenleaf and Ullman sometime in the late, maybe even mid-80s, appeared in the late 80s, and they proceeded the following way. Well, first associated to the operator itself, to RC, there was a... They looked at geodesics, or manifolds, M, and C was then a submanifold of a set of geodesics, certain geometric hypotheses, which I won't mention. So Z here is the incidence relation, that is, it's all pairs M gamma, where M is a point of manifold belonging to the geodesic gamma. And then if you look at the conormal bundle of that, well, the operator, the restricted random transform, is a Fourierian operator associated to this Lagrangian. And they showed that under the hypothesis of admissibility, then they could discuss what kind of operator was RC transpose composed with RC, and it fell in an operator, class of operators for which was the calculus available. And the two key points there was, I mean, they had much harder work to do than I do because they're interested in general admissible complexes and because, they didn't have somebody doing it ahead of them to tell them what the answer should be. But the two key points in sort of their analysis were there were, when they looked at the C transpose composed with C, that's the composition of the canonical relation with its adjoint, prime just means change of sign on some variables, then this consisted of two cleanly intersecting Lagrangians. One was a conormal bundle of the diagonal, so this is now a relation from T star M to T star M. One was the conormal of the diagonal in M cross M, the other was a flow out of a regular part of a set of critical values of the projection of C on the left factor, T star M. And microlocally, the class of operators was a class of operators called pseudo-differential operators with singular symbols, which had been investigated earlier. It's microlocally near the part which was the conormal of the diagonal, it looks like an elliptic pseudo-differential operator, and on the other part it was a Fourier integral operator, and this is what you wanted to avoid. Right? Okay, so at least that has the property, the consequence that the wavefront set relation then for RC transpose composed with RC lies in the composition of these two relations applied to the wavefront set of mu. This is the part that you want to recover. And this is the part that's spreading of wavefront set coming from the Fourier integral part. They also gave a construction of a partial parametrics for this operator. Now, other things that happened, let's see, in the early 90s, in the tomography literature, Alfred Lewis and Peter Maas introduced something called contour reconstruction, which was supposed to be a version of local tomography for a restricted X-ray transform in three space, and all they really did was look at a Laplacian applied to the adjoint composed of the transform composed with itself, and they used a slightly different weighting for the adjoint, but that's sort of irrelevant for the microlocal analysis of the picture, and they computed some pictures, and then late 90s Alex Katsevich computed a principal symbol using the Lewis-Maas weighting and did some reconstructions for RC transpose composed RC applied to synthetic data, and for the special case of looking at objects which consisted of a linear combination of characteristic functions or smooth functions times characteristic functions, gave some analysis of the artifacts. That is the part coming from the lambda 1 composed with the wavefront set. Okay, well, a few years ago, more years each time I talk about this, Irin Lan, who is a student of mine, and I undertook to sort of make the Greenleaf-Ullman analysis a little bit more explicit in the special case of lines through a curve. And we wanted to understand, say, the symbol of the Fourier integral operator part. Greenleaf and Ullman had given a prescription for the symbol of the pseudo-differential operator part or how to compute that, but hadn't given any analysis of sigma 1. And so in his thesis, his principal results were he gave a calculation for the principal symbol. Well, this was could be done by the prescription given in Greenleaf and Ullman also. This is for the pseudo-differential operator part. And Katsevich had a similar result, not with this weighting, and that's because he used a different weighting in the adjoint. It's clear that the lambda 1 part corresponds to sort of tangential. So where are these things? If you look at, again, at the curve, and if you look at a plane which is tangent to the curve at some point, and you look at its normal on a point x passing through this, think of this as a point in a direction. So the point is that here, small perturbations of this plane will actually break the intersection, right? And so you're going to have some kind of change of multiplicity and loss of information corresponding to the places where you're tangent, and this exactly the corresponding to the pairs xc, where you have planes corresponding, and the line following through here. So all pairs of points on this line are going to lie in the lambda 1, right? So those are, if you look at the lift of those lines, those are the bi-characteristics. So he was also able to give an explicit calculation of the symbol along the lambda 1 prime, some constant formula. So it's essentially these factors. So it really does what? So here, gamma represents the point of intersection here. X and Y lie on this line. So it's a square root of the distance between these times then the assumption will have to be C is the normal is a normal direction at that point, and we have to assume that the second derivative dotted with C is non-zero, or at least we get singularities where it is in the symbol. Now that corresponds, this being non-zero, corresponds to the hypothesis of clean intersection of the two Lagrangians. Okay, so some further results of this, which he did, which I won't mention right now. Well, maybe I'll say something about it. So he also able to give an analysis of what happens to the singularities when this is applied, when RC transpose composed with RC is applied to certain conormal distributions. And giving finding the symbols for those. So that sort of includes the kind of result that Katsevich had. So he was looking at specific case of smooth functions times characteristic functions of sets with smooth boundary, and we can look more generally at conormal distributions. And also give case where there's a, if this is a part of the surface where there's some examples to show the least smoothing possible might happen when if you take a distribution conormal for a surface which is formed by a ruled surface formed by lines tangent to the curve, then and the that's the you have the least smoothing possible for this operator. It was the smoothness classes or mapping properties were established by Greenleaf and Ullman, but this is an example showing where the worst case arises. Okay, now one thing that I should mention that comes out of this, and I don't know whether it might be interesting to Martin as well. So locally, if one has this condition of say, gamma double prime dot C not equal to zero, here it's called, yeah, that's okay. So tau is the parameter. In this case, one can actually then geometrically construct a pseudo-differential operator, at least micro-locally construct a pseudo-differential operator, which is characteristic for lambda 1. So if you apply that pseudo-differential operator, you would reduce the strength of the singularities introduced on the artifacts. And so in the case, one could... if they have equal Sobolev strength in... If one just looks at, say, this applied to a conormal distribution, they will have equal Sobolev strength, the desired wavefront set and the wavefront set introduced by the Fourier integral part, but one could form an operator which reduces the strengths of the ones formed by the Fourier integral operator part and then thereby perhaps separate the effects. Okay, so the proofs were based on directly testing the Schwarz kernel against oscillatory functions. Transversality conditions had to be satisfied in a large number of dimensions, and so they were very unwieldy, but was able to do it. So my main point today is to just give you a different viewpoint on the analysis of this operator in these couple special of cases where some of its features, I think, are clearer than at least... how they arise is clearer than it might be for struggling through the general situation. Okay, so you'll see where the intersecting Lagrangians come from. It might give some insight into the Greenleaf and Seegers degenerate case and also admits at least in principle extensions to some other complexes and other transformations. This part has just begun, so I don't have anything to tell you about there. Okay, so again, the analysis comes from looking at the Schwarz kernel, and I'm working to work in the situation of the main case. My main case, that is the operator where we have all lines passing through a curve. So I'm going to look at the Schwarz kernel of this, and so K will be the Schwarz kernel, and it has the property that if you pair that against a tensor product of smooth functions, it should be RC transpose composed with RC applied to one tested against the other. And by definition of the adjoint or the formal transpose, this should be RC psi 1 pair against RC psi 2. Now, if I write that out as an integral, it's an integral over the source curve gamma cross S2 of the two functions. And now the slight innovation is just to say that that's sort of a somewhat reduced pairing, that we can actually think about this as RC of psi 1 at the same point gamma, but a coincidence between the directions. That is, I'll think of this as a delta on S2 cross S2 paired with the product of those two functions. But this is a delta, is a conormal distribution on the sphere across the sphere. And what am I pairing it with really here is a push forward under the line integral operation of a tensor product of psi 1 cross psi 2. And so if I look at this mapping rho from omega cross gamma to the sphere, and so this just means, so I'm just thinking about this as a sphere centered here, and we'll take pairs of points here, and we just correspond them to look at the lines passing through here and map them to the corresponding points on the sphere under that. Well, then this sort of puts in the context of the geometric theory of Fourier integral operators pioneered by Gilliman and Sternberg in the 70s. In particular, we have the following diagram. So you have the kind of a double fibration picture, but not the usual one, right? So we have omega cross gamma mapping to S2 cross S2 on one side and omega cross omega on the other side. And what do we have? Our Schwarz kernel was really the pullback of delta paired with omega psi 1 cross psi 2. That's actually up here. But psi 1 cross psi 2 up here is really the pullback of psi 1 cross psi 2 down here under pi, right? It's independent of gamma. And so this is the pullback under rho of delta paired with the pullback under psi, or pi of psi cross psi. And so that's the push forward under pi of the pullback under rho of delta. paired with psi 1 cross tensor psi 2. And so this has given us a representation of the Schwarz kernel in the form of a pullback, of a push forward, of a pullback, of a conormal distribution. So let's see, what do we know? With the first, what's known is that under generally, push forward under smooth functions, it's known what that does to pullback. Smooth functions, knowing what done to wavefront set. Under push forward is also analyzed. So here, actually, both of these are submersions. But in general, one will have that the wavefront set of a pullback here of this will be contained in the pullback of the wavefront set, where that means, maybe that's on the next slide, what that means. So this will just be, means you take the differential of rho and apply it to the cotangent vectors appearing in the wavefront set of delta. And in fact, in this case, since rho was a submersion, it was transversal to this, is actually its pullback is conormal for the inverse image of the diagonal. And so we have that the wavefront set of the pullback is contained in the conormal bundle of the inverse image of the diagonal in the sphere, across the sphere. And now if pi is a submersion, there's a generally mapping from x to y, then there's a push-forward operation on wavefront sets as well. It's well understood what that does, and so one has a push-forward for the wavefront set relation defined here, the general case of pi mapping x down to y. And for us, that's going to tell us that we have pi star of the wavefront set of rho star delta contained in pi star of the conormal bundle of the inverse image of the diagonal. Did I say that right? Yeah. Okay. So what is that? You have to look to see what that is. And it turns out that if you look at the restriction of pi to the inverse image of the diagonal, it has two parts. One part, it's actually an embedding, except above the diagonal in omega cross omega. And so the part of it will push down to the diagonal. The part there's there, when you look above the diagonal, they're actually all the different planes that correspond to coincidence of x and y. And so then one really is getting separately, as you look for all the different directions from the push forwards corresponding to the different values of tau, corresponding to different points on the curve, each one gives you a plane of conormal vectors corresponding to this tangent plane. Right? Gives you And then there's the lambda 1 part. That's the part where it's actually is, if you look away from the diagonal, then it was actually an embedding there. And so one can actually say more. Well, these happen to be the two Lagrange manifolds, which were found by Greenleaf and Ullman. But since it's actually an immersion and an embedding there, pi 1 restricted to s hat away from the diagonal and omega cross gamma is conormal for the image. Well, a push forward of a conormal distribution under a diffeomorphism, or there it's actually conormal again. So one, moreover, there's a calculus that tells you how to compute the symbol in terms of the symbol upstairs. And so this gives another way. Now, that doesn't say the part of it's easy. The density factor is hard to compute no matter what choice of coordinates I take. The density factor for the half density seems to be messy to compute. I can't conservation of problems, right? No matter how you simplify it, something else pops up somewhere else. So the symbol is prescribed but not easily computed through a general symbol calculus there. So this also, you might ask, well, here what I've really relied on so far was I haven't said that this that the distribution, I've identified it here, but that it was in the class of kernels of singular pseudo-differential operators. Now, I think that's actually possible to handle that as well in this special case, but I'll have to talk to Günther about that later. Okay, so the last question I wanted to ask then and say is a little bit more. So this shows you where the two Lagrangians comes from. It shows you how to compute the symbol on the lambda 1 part. It does not give the symbol on the diagonal, but that is already known how to be computed by other methods. I don't know whether there's an extension of this that might give you the symbol there. The last thing I want to say is what happens in the case, say, of a non-admissible one. Is this idea useful there? So as far as I know, nobody has really analyzed RC transpose composed with RC for many non-admissible examples. So there's a particular, the example of Greenleaf and Seeger was a particular class of Radon transform here, for which I think one can see that, again, that one can do this same kind of idea of representing its Schwartz kernel as a push forward of a pullback of a delta function on some lower dimensional manifold. So in this case, one integrates over this is a special rigid family of lines in free space. You can see there's a translation invariance built in here. And however, if one looks at the tries to compute the form, the adjoint composed with the operator, the same picture will hold again, that this will be an integral over the three-dimensional space of parameters, but we can take x3 as the corresponding to our curve position in the last one and as separate, but look at a coincidence between the points of intersection of the line and the plane, right, for corresponding given for a given corresponding slope. And so now, again, we have a sort of a push-forward, pull-back distribution picture, and this then allows the one, again, to compute the Schwartz kernel as a push-forward of a pull-back kernel. And again, one can then find out what, see that analyze this map, the differential of this map. You'll see that it's, again, nice away from the diagonal. You do get the whole conormal bundle of the diagonal, and you can also see what happens off that. I don't know if anyone's interested. I can tell you what the other manifold is if anyone's interested, but I thought that this would give you a flavor of the viewpoint, which I think on studying these operators, which is maybe specific, somewhat specific, in that I have to find some lower dimensional coincidence, right? So I have to find some submanifold where I represent the pairing as a coincidence over a lower submanifold integrated over an additional parameter, but that allows me to represent it then as a push forward pull back kind of picture. So I think this also can be done, say, for the in some systems. I mentioned I've started the analysis of working this out for the Doppler X-ray transform. There, the geometry of the lines is the same, except that one is looking at vector fields instead of functions along lines. So I'll stop there and let you ask questions if you have any.
You know the strings of the singularity and lambda 1, does it help you to see the artifacts?
Well, that is the sense, yes. I mean, so if you were to see, you know both the strengths of it, but you also know that if you started, say, with something that was originally, if you start with a priori information, for example, that you started with something that was conormal, so it only had jumps across boundaries, then for any one of these, it's essentially going to be, you know, a ruled surface corresponding to lines tangent to the wherever you had the surface for which it was conormal and tangent to the curve, right? Those are where you propagate the singularities. So if you see ruled surfaces sitting inside your singularities, then you can have a hypothesis that those are artifacts. Of course, one can construct genuine objects which have their singularities in such places, but it would be something to begin to think, to look for, to identify artifacts as things which are, you know, by the string. Now, what isn't clear either is that if you look in something other than the Sobolev classes of smoothness, if you look in some not L2 based but in an LP based Sobolev class or something like that, then I don't know that they're at the same strength anymore. So that, but of course, with real data, one is never going to be able to compute, probably distinguish between LP and L2 Sobolev classes anyway. So, but I don't know. I started that analysis once, and I don't remember if I made any conclusions or not, so whether they have the same strength there. I think also it may be that if one looks in various Hilder classes, one can distinguish between the different degrees of singularity between for the projections of the two kinds of canonical relations. I mean Lagrangian. So.
I had a question about the estimation of the Sobolev strength and the Sobolev orders of the Fourier-Nicol operator part. I mean, I'm familiar with those estimates if that's the Fourier-Nicol operator part, if the canonical relation is kind of the graph of some kind of mapping between the product of cotension bundles. But how do you exactly estimate those Sobolev orders after you have applied my colloquial pseudo-differential operator of that Fourier-Nicol operator part?
Well, let's see. So, if one has, then this would simply be that if you have a distribution, say whose HS wavefront set you know, mm-hmm. right, and then you apply a pseudo-differential operator to that which is characteristic for part of that wavefront set, right? Then you will lower the order of singularity along the part where it's characteristic, right? Just by having the symbol vanish at the place along the set where it's characteristic, right? Symbol vanish on where you have on the part of the HS wavefront set. Other questions? Thank you.